Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato for MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to The New World next week. And this is episode 125, everything you can find, all the back episodes, and so much more at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, there's now 2,000 dead Americans in Afghanistan, but you wouldn't know it here in the States because all anyone wants to talk about is what one idiot says about rape. So we're here to talk about the stories that aren't being covered and hopefully give you the news that's going to be the news. And we'll begin with the street. And Iceland was right, and we were wrong, so admits the IMF. For approximately 3 years, our governments, the banking cabal, and the corporate media have assured us that they knew the appropriate approach for fixing the economies that they had previously crippled with their own mismanagement. We were told that the key was to stomp on the little people with austerity in order to continue making full interest payments to the bond parasites at any and all costs. Following 3 years of this continuous, uninterrupted failure, Greece already defaulted on 75% of its debts, and its economy is totally destroyed. The UK, Spain, and Italy are all plummeting downward in suicide spirals, where the more austerity these sadistic governments inflict upon their people, the worse their debt deficit problems get. Ireland and Portugal are nearly in the same position. Now, in what may be the greatest economic mea culpa in history, we have the media admitting that this government banking propaganda machine has been wrong all along. They've been forced to acknowledge that Iceland's approach to economic triage was the correct approach right from the beginning. What was Iceland's approach? To do the exact opposite of everything the banksters running our own economies told us to do. The banksters, naturally, told us that we needed to bail out the criminal big banks at taxpayer expense. They were too big to fail, and Iceland gave the banksters nothing. The bankers told us that no amount of suffering for the little people was too great in order to make sure that the bond parasites got paid 100 cents on the dollar. Iceland told the bond parasites that they would get what was left over after the people had been taken care of by their own government. The bankers told us that our governments could no longer afford the same education, healthcare, and pension systems which our parents had taken for granted. Iceland told the bankers what the country could no longer afford was to continue to be blood-sucked by the worst financial criminals in the history of our species. Now, after 3 years plus of this absolute dichotomy in economic policymaking, a clear picture has emerged, despite the best efforts of the propaganda machine to hide the truth. So in typical fashion, the moment that the corporate media is forced to admit that it has been serially misinforming us for the past several years, the revisionists are immediately deployed to rewrite history, as shown in this Bloomberg excerpt, quote, "The island's approach to its rescue led to a surprisingly strong recovery," the International Monetary Fund's mission chief to the country said. James?
Well, I haven't read any of this Jeff Nielsen before, but he is definitely not pulling any punches in this, so I would suggest people take a look at that full article. It's a very well-written article and gets to a lot of the heart of the issue. And I'm certainly no big fan of big government and big government spending and largesse, but if you're going to do it, Iceland is the example, not what's happening in Greece or Italy or Ireland or these other austerity nations where everyone's being forced to tighten their belts in the name of saving the banksters. But in Iceland, it was the people first, and the banksters can get whatever scraps are left over from the people's bailout, which is, if you're going to have a bailout, that's the way to do it. Of course, ultimately, long term, we have to be looking at taking off the fundamental restrictions and regulations on the economy, the government monopoly over currency printing and interest rate setting, and all of the other ways that the Federal Reserve and the banksters that shouldn't be in power are the ones that are manipulating the economy from the very top. But as long as the system is in place and these big, huge crashes happen and the government feels the need to be the ones to save the day, at the very least they can bail out the people and let the banksters starve to death because they are not too big to fail. Humans, the people at the bottom, are the ones that are too big to fail, and banks can go to hell. So Jeff Nielsen, very interesting. I hope people will check this article out.
James, a couple other related notes on this first economic segment of this episode. Rothschild, Paulson, and Soros all betting financial disaster is coming for the euro. More on that from the Economic Collapse blog. Meanwhile, shares and euro fall as Greek meetings loom, and that's from the Rothschild-controlled Reuters. And the last note will transition us to our second story. I have it posted to my own cyberspacewar.com. Skilled work. without the workers. Sophisticated robotics replace human workers in manufacturing and distribution around the world. But James, our second story from the Los Angeles Times, U.S. intelligence tests crowdsourcing against its experts. Might large groups be better predictors of wars and terrorism than analysts in government spy services? 9 years ago, Congress blocked a Pentagon agency from setting up a website that would have allowed anyone with a credit card to bet on the likelihood of foreign assassinations, coups, and terror attacks. The idea was to take advantage of the wisdom of crowds, a social science maxim that contends the average of a group of forecasters, under certain circumstances, tends to be more accurate than even the most knowledgeable single forecaster. But lawmakers worried the proposed predictions market would allow terrorists to profit from their own misdeeds. Congress forced the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, the military's cutting-edge research arm known as DARPA, to scuttle the program. But now, terrorism futures are back. DARPA's sister agency, the Intelligence Advanced Research Project Activity, IARPA, which funds experimental projects for the U.S. intel community, is running a four-year, $50 million program that pays people willing to predict major world events, including wars and terror strikes. Unlike the earlier scheme, participants can't profit from their predictions. The study, known as Aggregative Contingent Estimation, or Aggregative Contingent Estimation, is designed to see whether the 17 agencies in the U.S. intel community can aggregate the judgment of its thousands of analysts rather than rely on the expertise of just a few to issue more accurate warnings to policymakers before and during major global events. Participants in the project give their best guesses on whether the Free Syrian Army will gain control of Aleppo or whether Kim Jong-un will resign as the leader of North Korea before April 1st, 2013, according to project websites. James?
This, again, is just another really interesting article, and there's at least a couple of very interesting points to take out from that. One is that people can profit from their own misdeeds in the futures markets, so we might look at lots of different ways, like the way that Goldman Sachs can take certain futures positions on corn and grain prices and then profit from food shortages. That's a pretty weird position to be in for any institution to be in, let alone one with a history of evil like Goldman Sachs. Or we could look at 9/11 and the people who profited from not only United Airlines and American Airlines shorting, but also the shorting on Marshall McLennan and other of the institutions that were in the World Trade Center. Once again, that's been proven in the Business Journal 2006, etc., etc. There's been scientific studies. There were people who profited from that day's events. So that concept in itself is important. But again, here's another example of a type of technology that the U.S. government is working on behind the scenes to try to predict the future. And there are a number of other examples of that. I was recently talking about the sentient world simulation, which is literally this digital world they're trying to create with a digital version of you and everyone you know in there doing what they think you'll be doing and using all the data that they're snarfing up from all the different sources to try to make that model more predictive. It's a pretty bizarre nightmare world we're moving into where the government is doing everything it can to try to predict everything that everyone is going to do. And I like to think that they're going to fail and that this is quackery, but even if it isn't, they're certainly going to try to use this technology to dangle it in front of people and say, look, we know you're going to be a terrorist, etc., etc. So this is another example of that type of lust after future predictive technology. And we'll see what comes of it, but it's interesting it's being reported in the LA Times at any rate.
Mm-hmm. So maybe just to drive this point home, and James, we've said it time and time and time again now, it's like, oh, we're living in the future now. From extremetech.com, hackers backdoor the human brain, successfully extract sensitive data. And that's one that's really kind of difficult to wrap your head around, isn't it?
It's not only difficult, but it's actually, horrifying to think about that if it's true, again, it might be quackery, but if they're able to access parts of your memory without your knowledge or intent, that's pretty disturbing.
Eternal sunshine of the spotless mind, indeed. So, James, our first story was economic in nature. Our second story was technologic in nature. And our third story will be biologic in nature. Posted to my own foodworldorder.com by way of Natural News and CBS and numerous other sources. And again, all our sources cited will be provided in the show notes for these episodes. CDC claims over 1,100 West Nile virus cases in the U.S. Now cities, counties nationwide begin mass aerial sprayings of toxic anti-West Nile virus pesticides. Dallas County, Texas, and several nearby towns and cities in the Dallas area are currently being forcibly sprayed with toxic insecticides as part of a government effort to supposedly eradicate mosquitoes that may be carriers of West Nile virus. The mass sprayings, which are ramping up all across the country, involve blanketing entire areas with chemicals sprayed via airplanes, a highly controversial protocol that threatens not only all other insects and animals exposed, but also humans. According to the City of Dallas, more than 300 state-confirmed cases of West Nile have been reported throughout Texas this year, and at least 16 people in the Lone Star State have died in conjunction with the virus. The specifics of these cases and deaths have not been publicly released, but authorities insist that the situation is serious enough to warrant a series of at least three conjunctive aerial sprayings throughout Dallas County, including in Highland Park and University Park. The chemical being sprayed is known as DUET, D-U-E-T, and, quote, advanced dual-action mosquito adulticide that contains both sumethrin, the active ingredient in another mosquito pesticide known as Anvil, and prelethrin. Both chemicals are known to be highly toxic neuropoisons that target not only mosquitoes, but also bees, bats, fish, crickets, and various other animals and insects. Despite all this, officials continue to publicly insist that the spraying chemicals, the details of which are not being openly discussed, are harmless to humans, though there's no legitimate scientific evidence to back this claim. Instead, residents are simply being told the sprayings are safe and necessary, and many local residents seem content with this, having little or no concern about the harmful consequences of exposure. James?
So, James, any guesses on whose house specifically they've been told to avoid spraying?
Oh, could be numerous ones, but maybe the Crawford White House?
Yeah, well, exactly. George W. Bush's residence in Dallas has been specifically put off limits, and they've been the pilots have been told this, and their computer programs have been reprogrammed to make sure that they avoid that area. So, and that's not coming from a conspiracy theorist. That's coming from CBS News. So once again, I wonder. So we've got the former president is not going to be sprayed, but everyone else is, and they're telling you it's all fine and good. I wonder if there might be more to this story. So again, I think we can see not by what they say, but by what they do. And it's just like Prince Charles going everywhere with his personal chef and his personal organic foods so that he never has to eat GMOs, etc. We can watch what the elite do instead of what they say.
That's absolutely right. And that takes us back to what I was just referencing at the top of the show with, you know, the Aiken controversy here in the States about what one ill-informed fool says. And again, James, you know, I probably see a bit of it on a different angle here in the States because I just see all the social network rabble about Coney and Trayvon and Chick-fil-A and all that crap. And everybody loves to jump on all those bandwagons. Meanwhile, here in Portland, we're ramping up the fight against, they're going to try and add fluoride to our water. We're the last big city in America that doesn't have fluoride. And I've called City Hall. It's super easy. There were dozens and dozens of people in front of City Hall yesterday. They're going to vote on it on September 12th, but there's already opponents launching signature gathering initiatives to block fluoridated water in Portland. And I've even been able to tweet back and forth with our own mayor, Sam Adams. He follows Media Monarchy on Twitter at Media Monarchy, and you should too. So when you mutually follow each other, you can send a direct message. So I've been sending him direct messages. You know, not even, you don't have to be rude. You don't have to be mean. You just have to say, dude, you're putting medicine in the water. You're taking that choice away from people. Look at the back of your toothpaste label if you even use fluoride toothpaste. And it says, if you swallow this, call poison control. So, James, I'm going to continue to try and fight that fight on the Food World Order front here in Portland, Oregon.
I'm with you. I hope we can cover what's happening there in the future.
All right. This has been episode 125 of NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it, as always.
See you next week.